Okay, guys, come on in and grab a seat. Great to see you this morning. So bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to go. You know, we've been talking about connecting with the most confusing creature on planet Earth, a woman. And to help you have a greater understanding about a woman's perspective, I want you to watch this clip.
That's your problem. You don't want to be in love. You want to be in love in a movie. Read it to me.
Dear Sleepless in Sun, I have never written a letter like this in my life.
That's what everyone writes at the beginning of letters to strangers.
I know that. You think I don't know that?
What about Walter?
Walter. Oh, I would give anything to marry Walter. He's so unexpected. You think you can tell what he's like by just looking at him, but you can't. I should write something in this about magic.
What?
Something. What if I never meet him? What if this man is my destiny and I never meet him?
Your destiny can be your doom. Look at me and Rick.
Will you name the place?
I want to meet you.
How about the top of the Empire State Building?
On the top of the Empire State Building.
Oh, yes, that's perfect.
Sunset, Valentine's Day.
I'll be in New York with Walter. I can squeeze it in. I'll be in New York with Walter.
Do you want to hear about destiny? If I hadn't married Martin, I never would have bought the house with the dead tree, on account of which I got divorced. On account of which I hit a car and met Rick while buying a neck brace.
Wait a minute. You never told me you got a divorce because of a dead tree.
The tree man.
My father drank beer.
Fell in love with the tree man?
I did not say love. Did I say love?
Later in the day,
this is my favorite part.
Now or never.
Never is a frightening word.
We'd be fools to let happen if passes by.
Mm-hmm. Winter must be cold for those with no warm memories. We've already missed the spring.
Yeah. Probably my last.
Men never get this movie.
I know.
You know, from a woman's perspective, there's a lot of things men just don't get. And did you know one of the reasons is our brains are structured differently? In fact, the latest scientific research has shown how different our brains really are. You'll notice on the screen the female brain. In the center of that brain, you'll see the phone skills, shopping, and indecision center. And then there is the irrational thoughts area, followed by the jealousy lobe, and then the need for commitment hemisphere. It takes a whole hemisphere for this one. And then there is the sense of direction nuclei. It's a little spot in the midst of the commitment hemisphere, just a small little nuclei. Then there's the ice cream receptor, the chocolate center. And at the very base, the argue and debate lobe. And last but not least, there is the sex particle. Now, a man's brain is completely different than that. You'll see a male brain, and in the center, there's this massive wad of flesh called the sex lobe. And then that's followed by the interruption lobe. And then as you go along, there's the short tension span fragment. Then there's the TV area. Then the mass center, and then the sports center, and embedded in that is the sex gland. Within the sex gland is a small dot called the commitment molecule. And then there is the stick shift area. Then you'll see the CF lobe, and CF stands for computer fixation lobe. And then there's a large area to the right of that called the lame excuse gland. And also there's the remote control addiction center. And buried in the remote control addiction center is the listening particle. And then there's the personal hygiene atom. It's only an atom, but it has been detected. And right at the very base is the ask for directions resistance center. So you can see why we're so different. God made us that way. And that's why men don't get it when it comes to women. Now, I want to do just a brief review. And last week, remember, I gave you a verse that I said every man in this room needs to memorize. It has great wisdom as it pertains to the confusion of male-female relationships. You remember the verse? 1 Peter 3, verse 7, it begins like this: "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding." Now, that word understanding, remember, it means according to knowledge. And that phrase alone should scream at us that she's not like you. She's different than you. She's different than me. She is a woman. And then he continues, "giving honor to the wife as a weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Now, a man needs to understand that he's not naturally born with the skills that make him competent in relating to the woman in his life. It's acquired knowledge. It's an acquired skill that has to be learned over time. He doesn't possess that by his natural nature. And so if he does move into a relationship and he leans upon his natural abilities, he needs to know he's going to fumble the ball. He's going to hurt the woman that he loves and that he cares about. So that verse is really ground zero when it comes to a man successfully engaging with a woman in his life. And then last week we looked at three different models of the marriage relationship. Do you remember the first? We called it the top-down traditional. And this marriage relationship has some of the features of the biblical model, but it's distorted and twisted in a way that the husband begins looking more like a lord than he does a lover in that relationship. He's not a leader. He comes across like lord, and we saw that he is there primarily for the benefits that accrue to him. And there are many women who wrestle with their husbands in this kind of top-down traditional model. Then there was the second model, the model that's more predominant today. It's the 50-50 identical, where the husband is seen as the partner in the relationship, and the goal is fairness, which will automatically default to everyone being the same. Everything is parceled out to be equal. There are no roles. And fairness is the banner that flies over this marriage relationship. Unfortunately, that banner falls apart. It breaks down over time because balancing everything fairly is an impossible task. You can't do it. And we're always measuring whether we do things equally. And eventually, if we keep doing that, one of us is going to think my pack's heavier than yours, which destroys the whole idea of fairness. And when that happens, resentment sets in to the relationship. So you could really call this marriage relationship the 50-50 mythical marriage of sameness. And then we looked at the last model, the side-by-side biblical. And in this marriage relationship, the husband is deemed to be the head, and we define head as being responsible leader of equals in a symbiotic relationship together where each partner ends up complementing the other. And we saw how that complementary relationship is enhanced by three core issues. Three core issues. The first was core roles, second, core response, third, core concerns that have to be embraced to interact with one another. Core roles, core responses, core concerns. And do you remember how we define core? This is critical. We said that core is the essential calling, core is the small but essential ingredient that every marriage must not ignore, neglect, or compromise. It's small, but it's essential. It can't be ignored, it can't be neglected, it can't be compromised if it is to be successful overall. Now, it's an essential calling by God, not culture, not opinion. It's given to us by God, and it's irreplaceable if it's going to have, if you're going to have a successful relationship with a woman. And the core doesn't mean that that's all a man and a woman do. It doesn't mean that's all of who they are. It just means that it is essential to who they are and what they do. And it's essential calling in each, in the marriage that becomes a foundation. It's small, but it's essential, but it's the foundation upon which everything else is built. And it's critical that you catch that, because when a person hears that a woman's role in marriage is to be helper, they immediately default to a woman in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant. And we're not talking about that at all. That's not even on the table. This could be a woman, a modern-day woman, carrying a briefcase, going to work every day, but she's true to that core calling that God has on her life. She honors it, and she makes her decisions in light of that calling, never to be replaced by other things. And she does that because she wants to get more out of life, not less. And if she doesn't do that, she ends up getting less out of life rather than more. And then last week we saw that the first of those roles, core roles, is that God gives a husband and wife in marriage. These are core roles that God gives a husband and wife. And those roles are the titles given in Scripture. And for the wife, as we review, it's helper, remember? It's the helper. And that's given to the wife. And when you think of helper, you need to immediately think of servant lover. And that title stresses the position of support and nurture and care in the home. And that is her essential calling. She's called helper, but you need to think of it as servant lover. And we looked at that last week. And then in relationship to the husband, he's called the head. And that title given to him by God is a blend of opposites. Two things that don't naturally go together, servant and leader. That's what you need to think of. And that title, head, which means servant, leader, is not stressing power and privilege. It's stressing protection, provision, and direction for the family. And that's the core of his calling. It's an equal balance of opposites in the relationship. And a man has to contend his whole life with this balance, because they are so opposite. If there's too much leader, then he comes across as a lord. If there's too much servant, then he comes across as a wimp, a yes man. Or you should say a yes ma'am in the relationship. Now, you got to listen to this. This is critical. Your appointment as leader is not based upon your natural ability. It's not based upon your natural ability at all. It's based upon your responsibility and your accountability before God. And every day there is a cross you've got to bear in this role that forces you to die to yourself. You can't accomplish this unless you die to yourself. And every time your wife sees you die to yourself, it frees her up to give herself to you. When you die to yourself, she sees that. She feels free to give herself to you. You see, when you serve her, it makes her serving you seem reasonable. When you serve her in this, in her mind, it makes her serving you seem reasonable. That's how they work together, and it's critical that you see that. Now, those core roles, head and helper, are the very first area we looked at last time. But there's a second and third area. They're not only core roles, there's also core responses. And these core responses empower your mate's role. Now, you got to get this. In order for your wife to feel good about her role as helper, she needs a certain response from you. You give this to her as her husband, this response, that makes her feel good about her role as helper. And for you to feel good about your role as leader in the relationship and initiator, you need a certain core response from her as a wife. So what we're talking about is the response given to you from your wife or given to you to your wife from you. These are your core responses. So what does a wife need from a husband in order to embrace her role as helper? Well, you go back to the same verse we were in earlier. 1 Peter 1 says, husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding. Now, the next line, the next very word, gives you your core response to her that will empower her to be the nurturing, caring, supporting person that she was created to be, to carry out this role as helper that's so necessary for this organization called marriage. So how do you need to respond to her? Look at the next words, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel and as heirs together to the grace of life. See, for your wife to honor the roles that she's been given and invest in you and the home, she's investing in a place that nobody notices. It's kind of behind the scenes. I mean, no one knows what she does except her husband, and she needs to know that what she does in your eyes is extremely valuable. That's what honor means, that it's valuable. It has great worth for her to invest in supporting and caring for her husband, for her to give herself in nurturing to her children. She needs to be reminded of the value of her role, and that reminder has to come from you, the husband. She wants to know that she's needed, and what she does is significant in the home, with the kids, and with you. So she's constantly asking, what value do you place on me? Or do you just see me as a servant in this relationship, serving you, and all that has to be communicated by you, the leader. It can't come from any place else. It has to come from you. That's your core response to her. That unleashes and empowers her to live out her role. She can't do it unless you respond correctly. So the onus is really on you. In fact, the entire women's movement of the 70s, it rose out of this feeling of inequity in the relationship, feeling taken advantage of by the husband in the home. And one of the roles the man has in relationship to the woman is to never, ever forget that you are to honor her for what she does. And if you do that, then she will never doubt her role has value in your presence. So one of the core responses is you have to honor her. That's your first core response. You got to figure out the multiplicity ways to honor her in that role. But there's a second core response every man needs to give his wife. In fact, in Proverbs 31, that's the very last chapter, there's a whole chapter dedicated to the virtuous woman. And in that chapter, it talks about how great she is and the things she does and the dignity she adds to the home and the loving support she gives her husband. And then after the entire chapter talks about all these virtues, her husband speaks up in the last two verses of that chapter. He's not said a word at all, and then he speaks. I want you to notice what he says in verse 29 and 30. It says, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Do you see what he's doing? He's using his words to praise her so she has no doubt about her value and worth in his eyes. He's acknowledging, I see your sacrifice. I see what you're doing here in the home. And it honors him, so he wants to in turn honor her. And so his wife, not only needs to be honored by you, but she needs to be verbally praised by you. So it's praise and honor. And if she doesn't feel those positive responses from you, she starts becoming less responsive to you. And if she feels an inequity in that relationship, that it's not equal, that she's not honored, then she begins to withdraw from you. It's human nature. It's exactly what happens in a marriage relationship. Now, for the husband to fulfill his role in leadership, what kind of response do you need from your wife? In order to fill your role of initiator and leader in that relationship, what do you need from her? Well, what you need from her is a very hard word to fathom in the 21st century. In fact, it's extremely controversial. And what you need from her is the word submission. Submission. Now, we've been traditionally taught that the man's role is head and the woman's role is submission. That is not true. You got to catch this. The scripture never says her role is submission. Her response to your role that makes your role successful, that encourages you, is one of her responses is she needs to submit. If you say submission is her role, that degrades and defeminizes who she is. Helper is her role. Submission and support is her response to your role. Do you get that? Helper is her role. How she helps you is her response to your role, and she helps you through submission and support. In other words, if a husband's going to lead and take responsibility for the family, then his wife can't compete with him. That's not going to work in the relationship. If she's criticizing and competing with all his initiatives, after a while, what does a husband do? He loses heart, doesn't he? And when he loses heart, he becomes passive. And we saw last semester that every man has a natural propensity to become passive in a relationship. So she needs to be constantly encouraging that initiative that's in you to lead. And she needs to look for ways to encourage that in you. She can't compete with you. So submission is really this. It's stepping out of the way to allow you to lead as God desires for you to lead. It's stepping out of the way, letting you be responsible for what you need to be responsible for. It's not undercutting your leadership, but her response of submission is empowering your leadership in the home. So you fulfill your role of being responsible, directional, provisional, protectional, protection-oriented. And for a woman to do that, she's got to trust God. And that God knew what He was doing by giving you to her as her husband, her head. It comes down to, will she trust God? Now, there's a lot of confusion over this word submission. It's a volatile word today. But submission does not mean that she walks around saying, yes, dear, whatever you want, dear, and she just rolls over like a doormat. That's not what we're talking about when we talk about submission. Submission also isn't the husband making demands on his wife, you've got to obey me. What it is an attitude that she gives her husband. It can't be commanded. It can't be asked for. It has to be stirred within her that she gives to her husband that says, I want you to be the kind of leader God has asked you to be. And I don't want to get in the way of that. I want you to take the responsibility that's been laid at your feet. And then finally, submission doesn't mean to enable you to do things wrong. In fact, in Colossians chapter 3, Paul talks about that. It says, wives, submit to your husbands. But look at that last statement. It qualifies the first. As is fitting in the Lord. So whatever she does for you, it should encourage godly leadership, not ungodly leadership. And what a husband needs from his wife is that kind of empowerment that encourages him to go for it, to pursue it. She empowers him with a response that allows him to feel the weight of the responsibility that's been laid on his shoulders. When I resigned from my church in Little Rock, Arkansas, I came into the kitchen and I told Patty I resigned. Instead of being frantic, what are we going to do? We've got kids to take care of. My wife gave me the best response you could possibly imagine. It said, "Doug, you're responsible." She said, "Wow, so what are we going to do next?" Now, that has power in the life of a man. It enlarges who he is. It says, I'm responsible here before God, and my wife is not stepping in the way of that. She is trusting me. And it speaks loudly to a man's heart. So there are two responses in marriage that help the other person carry out their role. The woman's response is submission and support. The man's response that helps her carry out her role is praise and honor. And in a healthy marriage where you see these roles being lived out, and the man is the protector and the provisional person who's living out that role with all of his heart, what you discover standing next to him is a woman who radiates equality because he spent all of his life with her, telling her how valuable she is, telling her how he wants to honor her. And he does it by his words, how he treats her, how he honors her, how he speaks to her, how they make decisions together in the relationship with one another. It says, "You are valuable and I honor you." And that's why she stands next to him with a smile on her face, knowing that equality is here. Two equals fulfilling different roles in the relationship. And what he needs to lead well is for her to step out of the way and communicate, "Honey, you're responsible." And when she does that, it calls something out of the heart of a man. And what he has to do is constantly remind her how valuable she is in the relationship in his eyes. And that is the small core issue that cannot be forgotten in a marriage relationship. It's not all they do, but it's critical. It's small and it's core. So their core roles: she's helper, he's head. And their core responses: she responds to you with submission and support. You respond to her with praise and honor. But there are also core concerns. And these core concerns meet your mate's deepest needs. And when I say core concerns, here's what I'm talking about. This is how you speak woman. And it's how your wife speaks man. These are core concerns that show you how I engage with the heart of this creature that I have the hardest time understanding. So, what are the longings in a man's heart she needs to be concerned about addressing? We're going to hit these quickly because I want to spend the bulk of my time on the other. So these are longings in your heart that she addresses. Number one is companionship. A man doesn't want to be alone. He wants a woman who will do things with him. He wants her to be involved in many of his activities. That's companionship. Secondly, there's admiration. Nothing makes a man stand taller than looking at the twinkle in his wife's eyes as she looks at him and says, "I admire you." That's admiration. And for a man to feel like a real man, he needs that from his wife. Third is support. Did you know in the last campaign in Iraq, for every soldier we had on the battlefield, there were seven soldiers behind the scenes in support? In any war, it's like that. You got to have a support mechanism for the guy that's in the field doing the fighting. And it's the same in any organization, not just military. And so what happens today in the home is you got two soldiers in the field, husband and wife, and no one in support. These two are plodding ahead and they're exhausted. And by their nature, they're looking for someone to support them. But they're not finding support from one another. And so after a while, of slogging it out in this battle called marriage, which is difficult because we're different creatures from different planets. Each one gets tired enough that they go find support somewhere. They're not getting it from each other. They're going to get it from somewhere else. Because in every organization, there's got to be support. And the interesting thing in the past is we thought that the female is the more virtuous of the species. I mean, you remember back 50 years ago, who was having all the affairs? It was the men having the affairs. The men were the ones that were kind of the dogs, and the women stayed at home, and they were kind of left to take care of the children. They were looked at the more virtuous species. But what's happened in the past 30 years, as women have moved into the workplace, we have discovered that the morality among women is plummeting. Now, why is that? It's because they are looking now for support. They're looking for somebody to come in and encourage them. So you got two people looking for support, and the latest statistics show that the men and women are about the same in terms of their morality. And it's plummeted in both species because everyone is worn out looking for somebody to support them. And so someone shows you an interest, and suddenly you're getting that encouragement and support that you need. And so before you know it, your attention is moved that direction. Now, a family does not function well when no one's in support. Does that mean a woman should abandon the marketplace? Absolutely not. No, I'm not saying that at all. But she can't lose sight of the core focus of her role as helper. She's not to abandon the marketplace, but remember, core is the small but essential foundation upon which everything else is built. And then lastly, a man needs physical responsiveness. I say that because men are intensely physical creatures. And when a woman is skilled at giving her man companionship, giving him admiration for what he does, and she also is good at giving him support for all that he does when he's out in the workplace and he comes home, needs a safe place to let down, and she is physically responsive to him, let me tell you, that's a happy man when those four things are met in his life. It's a very happy man. But what are the four things that a woman needs that will challenge you in your response to her? This is where I want to spend the bulk of the time. And we'll give them to you real quick, and then we're going to digest them in detail. The first is companionship. It's a different kind of companionship than yours. Yours is recreational companionship. She's looking for relational companionship. The second, security is what a man needs to give his wife. So there's companionship, there's security. Third is significance. And fourthly is emotional responsiveness. Not physical responsiveness, but emotional responsiveness. It's a little different from yours. Now, what I want to do is take each of those and look at them in detail. I want to give you some practical insight into how do you respond to your spouse in those ways. So the question is, how do you speak woman? I'm going to give you your very first lesson in speaking woman. These are core concerns. Your wife needs companionship. Number one, the number one complaint a woman has about her husband is he won't talk to me. That's the number one plight in America today. He won't talk to me. Women were created by God to be intensely relational creatures. And much of their feeling of well-being is found in connecting verbally and emotionally with the man in their life. Have you ever wondered why romance novels just sell like crazy with women? Doesn't sell with men at all. Those are aimed at women. It's because those things exploit a woman's imagination and the innate need she has inside to be deeply connected in a relationship. They cause her to fantasize about companionship. They allow her to conjure up stories and scenarios where a man and a woman are drinking deeply from the well of each other's lives, because that's what she longs for. And by the way, that is exactly what she got from you when you were dating. When you were dating, you were a poet. You wrote poetry. You wrote songs. You learned to play the guitar. You sung to her. You wrote her notes. You thought about her and engaged with her, orchestrating all these romantic things to win her heart. But what you did is you surprised her with love. That's what she wanted. And then she thought, this is what I want the rest of my life. I'll marry this man. And when you said, I do, you stopped. You just quit. And so she feels taken advantage of because she thought she was getting this over here and she got this instead. And instead of drinking from the deep well of togetherness, what ends up developing in the relationship is a creeping separateness, where you end up pursuing kind of separate lives, and she loses what she's longed for all her life, and that is companionship with you, a man. That's what she longs for. It's like that romantic Valentine. Maybe you've seen it. I mean, on the front, it says, if you love someone, you set them free. If they come back, If you love someone, you set it free. And if it returns to you, it's truly yours. If it disappears, it wasn't yours to begin with. That's real romantic, isn't it? Then you open that card up and it says, and if it sits there watching television, unaware it's been set free, you probably married it. That's what she got in most men after a few years. And a wise man is one who looks for ways to keep connected with his wife and allow her to experience his life with her, doing it together. And you need to know this, guys. Your wife inside has got a love bank. And the way she keeps score of the deposits you make in her love bank is differently than the way you keep score of those deposits. I mean, for instance, you do something nice for your wife, you get 1 point. You do something big for your wife, you get 1 point. You do something small for your wife, you get 1 point. Men don't keep score that way. I mean, you do something small for your wife, on your scorecard, you record 1 point. You do something big for your wife, you go, hey, 50 points. That's the way men keep score. So, life begins to get busy and you've done nothing for 3 months. So you save up the money and you pour it on and you do something gigantic for her. And you're thinking you got 50 points credit for that. So what happens a few months later? She complains that you're not being romantic. And you pull out your card. You go, wait a minute, honey. Remember 3 months ago when I took you to blah, 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 50 points. And she looks at you and goes, uh-uh. She pulls her card out of her purse. She goes, no, just 1 point. That's all you got. Now, guys, what I'm going to tell you next is going to save you a boatload of money. So I know I've got your attention. Romancing your wife is not gigantic things. Although, if you do them, she's not going to turn them down. Romancing her is many little things. So it's leaving in the morning at 5 o'clock to come here, and you put a post-it note on her mirror that says, "Wanted you to know I love you." It's calling her during the day and saying, "Hey, I was just thinking about you. How's your day going?" It's emptying the dryer and folding the clothes while she's reading stories to the kids. It's doing something that you wouldn't ordinarily do that helps her out in the process. I mean, that's romancing your wife. I mean, you got to get this. I'm thinking, romancing means I've got to plan weekend cruises periodically. And Patty's looking to me and going, no, honey, just call me and ask me how I'm doing. Romancing your wife is not big things that are miles apart. It's small things that add up over time. Now, if you catch that, gentlemen, you'll become a master at speaking woman in this area of companionship. So, here's what I want to do. I want to give you some must-dos and then some can-dos, encouraged to do, and you're not going to have time to write them down, so I put them on a card. You can put this on the wall of your office or at your desk to remind you of these things. So let me give you one must-do. Every man needs to do this. Date your wife regularly. And then there's a can-do. Develop common interests you enjoy doing together. Any man can do that. Now, the last one is a courage to do. Plan a special just for you two getaway. Okay? That's on the card to remind you. You can always do the must-do. You can probably do the can-do. And God calls you to courageously lead, so you can really also do the courage to do. Okay, secondly, your wife not only needs companionship, but if you're going to learn to speak woman, then your wife also needs security. A woman needs to know she's going to be taken care of. And as more and more women enter the workplace making more than their husbands, that causes you to think, wow, look at her. She's doing fine. She's doing great. She can take care of herself. But I want you to know that does not change the paradigm. A wife, by nature, wants someone to look and take care of her, to engage with her, to provide for her. And especially financially, a wife needs a man who will free her up and let her be herself as a woman and a mother through the different stages of life. That's what we're talking about. And to do that, there needs to be a financial sense of security in that relationship where a man steps up to the plate and says, I'm owning that responsibility because there are seasons in life that come, especially when children come into that relationship. And that she's going to say, I'd like the option to pursue staying home and nurturing my kids. And I'd like the option not to work, and a man needs to support her than that. And guys, if you don't, listen to me, if you don't, and she desires that, you put a thorn in your relationship with her. It's going to be there. And there are a lot of young men that just don't understand that. In fact, in Paul Harley's book, His Needs, Her Needs, he talks about an observation that he's made after observing over 10,000 marriages in his practice as a psychologist. He made this statement. He said, I discovered that married women who make lots of money resent having to work. Now, the key word there is resent having to work. I mean, many have great careers, but at some point, they want freedom to fulfill their call, their yearning inside to be a mom. And if that's not possible because their husband's saying, you got to work, you got to do this, Harley says his research shows she resents it and she holds it against you. And today we got more and more young men listening to the rhetoric of this culture in which we live. And they say this relationship has got to be equal. It's got to be the same. I mean, we both got to carry the equal load. And so they're saying, well, honey, my expectation is that you got to work. You must work. You have to work. You got to pull your weight around here. That's what our culture is saying. And there's no thought given to that unhealthy expectation and how it undercuts the relationship because of what's in a woman's nature. And it creates problems, especially when kids come along and she feels that yearning to engage with the kids and maybe stay home or work, but her calling is home. And I believe marriage, as God intends it, requires a man to embrace a much bigger view of marriage. I mean, his role is to be responsible in serving his wife. We saw that last week in Ephesians 5. That's his role. He serves his wife. And so when she comes to you and says, I'd like to stay home, You need to embrace her desire and do whatever you can to make that possible, to look at her and say, I want to do that, even if it means stepping down our lifestyle, and we got to decide how we do that together. Because what you would do in the home is far more valuable to me with our kids over a lifetime than the income you might bring in. And so together you make those decisions, but she feels loved by you because you're embracing what's going on in her heart. And that's the very reason I advise every young couple, especially those I marry, that when they marry, I mean, both of them are working, and that's great, but live on one salary. Try to live on the husband's salary, because there's going to come a time when kids enter the picture that she's going to see a yearning to stay home. And if you've gotten used to living on two salaries, it's almost impossible to make the transition to one salary. So bank her salary. Use it as a down payment for a house, or go on a great vacation every summer and blow it there. But don't live on it, whatever you do. And I look at my family, and there's a marked difference between the household my kids grew up in and the households that their friends grew up in, whose goal was to get the bigger car, the bigger house, or to get the new boat. But we tried to live by objectives that were more noble than that, that last for a lifetime. They're biblical. They're lofty. And they say what matters are the relationships that are going on in this house. And so what we have today, which is sad, is you got two kids, say, just waiting, waiting, and waiting for mom or dad to pick them up at daycare, to get them home, to feed them, and slam dunk them in bed because they're exhausted. And you can't tell me we'll raise a healthy next generation doing that. And so, what's a must-do in this area? Look at your card. From time to time, tell your wife, I'm committed to you for life. That's critical. And here's a can-do. Establish financial disciplines. Avoid debt as much as possible. I mean, do you have a budget? Do you need to pursue getting involved in Crown Ministry or Financial Peace? I think that would be critical to help you get your financial feet stable. And here's the courage to do. Seek to provide financially so that your wife doesn't have to work, especially while raising the kids. And then thirdly, if you want to learn to speak woman, your wife, you need to know your wife has a deep need for significance. In fact, Peter addressed that in the verse we looked at the beginning, grant her honor as a fellow heir. I mean, we think that we need to buy our wives maybe a new car or get them a charge card and say, hey, go to the mall and shop till you drop. We think that's what fulfills them. But you know what research shows fulfills your wife, what she really wants? It's not that. It's you. It's you. She wants engagement from you. That's what fulfills her, your recognition for who she is. And yet many husbands would list that dead last in the list of things she needs. Now, assuming our wives need more things misses the point. We need to realize they need us. They need us involved with them in the things they enjoy. They need us recognizing their work is valuable, especially if they're home. And after the day is ended, gentlemen, and all the meals are prepared, and she's finished the carpools, and she has sewn on the button, and she's assisted the 12-year-old in her science project, and she has been entertainment director for four little ones in the backyard all afternoon. You need to know, for her, there are no plaques to hang on the wall. There's no awards to receive. There's no sales record to set that wins her the trip to the Bahamas. There's no promotion. In fact, there's no hope for a promotion. You know what she has after a day like that? You. You. That's what she looks forward to. You. And how you respond to her makes all the difference in the world to how she gets up the next morning and pursues that same kind of lifestyle with the kids. How you honor her, how you respond, how you understand what she's going through, is her future. That's the power you wield. And we forget that the hands that are involved in being there, nurturing, caring, and lifting up, those hands are pure gold in culture. And we need to honor them that way. And if we understood that, I don't think there'd be the crime problems, the violence problems, the broken homes we have all over the country today. And so you need to honor her in that. And if you do, you'll learn to speak woman. So here's a must-do. Regularly tell your wife how much you value what she does and how important she is to you. Here's a can-do. Surprise your wife with notes of praise. Even better, with flowers. Or a special night out just to say thank you for all that she does for you. And then the courage to do, from time to time, lavish your wife with gifts. It might be jewelry if that's important to her. Surprise trips, money to spend. Costlier, better. I gave Patty, I gave her $500. I said, this is for you to go spend time with your best friends who happen to be in Arkansas. And she looked at me like she had died and gone to heaven. I get to be with Harriet and Jill? Yeah, take it. Oh, we can't afford that. I've got it taken care of. Don't worry about it. You plan the get-together and have fun. It spoke volumes to her. And lastly, if you're going to be a man who speaks woman, you need to know your wife's social responsiveness. Your wife has a deep need for you to respond to her emotionally. You know why? Because her world is the world of emotions. That's where she, you don't live there, but that's where she lives, in a world of emotions. And one of the most valuable lessons I think I have learned in life is that when Patty is pouring out her feelings to me, I don't try to solve her problems. She wants to be heard. And so I've got to draw her out. I've got to listen. And I've discovered that when my wife has what seems to be a problem, she doesn't want me to solve it. What she wants me to do is process her emotions with her. That's what she needs, to draw her out, to validate how she feels. Instead, every man is a problem solver. And we want to go in and solve that problem. But she's not looking to have it solved. She's looking to have it processed with her. And once she understands that problem and she gets her arms around it, she's more than capable of solving herself. So she's looking for someone who can empathize and understand what she's going through. In fact, John Gray, in his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, put it this way. When a man does not object or argue with a woman's feelings, but instead accepts and confirms their validity and listens with empathy, as she explores those feelings, that's when a woman will truly feel loved. So when you walk in the door and the room, the house is in chaos. You don't go, what's going on here? And she says, well, Johnny, this and that and this and that. Why didn't you send them to their room? That doesn't help. You think you just solved a problem, but you didn't. You just made matters worse. In fact, there are times that Patty has looked at me and said, okay, I'm in the middle of telling you something, and I don't want you to solve it. She understands what I'm trying to do. And I've had to go, oh, okay. And I have to kind of redirect, refocus, and then tell me more, honey. I want to hear more. You're not there to solve it. You're there to draw her out. You've got to focus on that. And guys, if you'll master this, you're going to hit home runs with your wife. And you come home and she's had a hard day, and if you will say this phrase, and we'll give it to you in a minute, you'll knock it out of the park. You're going to become the Babe Ruth of marriage, I'm telling you. So what is this magical phrase? You're going to have to memorize it. Here's what you do. Oh, honey, tell me more about that. Just that simple. And she starts talking, and she's talking. And she pauses, you go, wow, tell me more about that. And when she finishes, she looks you in the eyes, and she said, you are so wonderful. I mean, it just make her day. You drew her out. She's going to come to her own conclusions, but you listened to her. And rather than walking in and saying, this is what should have happened, you've drawn her out, and she feels validated, and she's processed her emotions. And there is a whole world of feelings there that she likes to explore, and you need to learn how to explore it with her. And it's not natural. By the way, did you know that's why she likes you to go shopping with her? I mean, I can't think of anything worse than going shopping. That's why she wants you to go shopping with her. Because you're sitting there looking through that rack of clothes and she's talking about this and that. You're there to help process the emotions, what she's feeling, what she's thinking. Just reflect back to her what she's saying and just let her keep going. And you're just listening. Now, she's got that rack of clothes. I mean, the stimulation about kills me. You're going through this whole rack and she's talking and she's looking at this. She holds this up and she puts it back. And then she goes to another rack and she says, come on, let's leave. And she hadn't bought anything. And I'm saying, just buy something. And let's get out of here. But that's not why you're there, guys. You think you're there to kill something, bring it home. No. You're there to process emotions with her. And you've got to get that down. So let me give you some must-dos. Regularly tell your wife with hugs, I love you. Here's a can-do. Learn to say, so tell me how are you doing. And do it in a quiet place where you have time to listen, not as you're heading out the door. And then the courage to do on special occasion, let your wife know that you love her with spoken words, a card, or maybe a poem. Break out that guitar again. Spell it out in details, all the things that you admire and love about her. Be specific and romantic. And then, because we're going over time, I'm going to finish with 6 reasons why you need to embrace the side-by-side relationship. You can just fill in the blanks. The first is, it positions a man and a woman for what they naturally do best. A woman is a natural nurturer. A man likes to lead responsibly. Our culture says that, no, those aren't true. They're opposite that. And that's why 40% of kids have absent dads, and the divorce rate is epidemic today in America. We need to be correctly positioned with God's design. B says, it organizes a man and a woman to complement each other rather than compete with one another. When a man and woman embrace these roles as directed in Scripture, it gives them a tremendous gift because suddenly they discover they're complementing one another rather than competing with one another. And C says it creates an environment that is best for healthy development of children. Children need a nurturing, caring mom, but they also need an engaged, involved dad. They don't need 2 careerists toxically focused on advancing themselves. Your kids don't need that. And then D says it becomes the ideal we train our kids from an early age to embrace. When my boys were younger, I used to say, one day, son, you're going to be leading a family. And your responsibilities there are going to be impacted by how you take care of your responsibilities here and now. This is part of your training to lead a family successfully. So I'm always focusing them on the future. And E says it honors God's word, and it's blessed by Him. And D says it prospers and advances society as a whole. In other words, it makes a healthy world. I think Abraham Lincoln had it right. He said, the strength of a nation lies in the homes of its people. Now, if you apply what I've told you today, you are well on your way to earning your PhD in woman. And what I've told you are timeless truths that are accurate for the home and for the woman you've been given, not just today, but for marriages in every generation. Now, I want you to leave with 2 books in mind. Rocking the Roles talks about these roles. Robert Lewis wrote that. He's the guy who put together most of this material. Guys, you need to pick this up, and it's almost out of print. I'd recommend you getting it now. And probably one of the most practical books for help is For Men Only by Shanti Fellheim. It talks about how to understand a woman. You'll be amazed at what Shanti has learned through research. And then there's another book written by Shanti and her husband called For Women Only. This is a book your wife can read about you, but I'd recommend you reading it about you because it gives you vocabulary that you can put around feelings that you have had but you haven't known how to articulate. So, three books. I know men don't read, but I'm trying to encourage you. I haven't met a leader yet that's not a reader. So because you're a leader, I'm encouraging you to read. Now, we've got a few questions for your small groups. Sorry it took so long. Enjoy the questions, and we'll see you back next week. Next week is going to be extremely practical. 25 ways to serve your wife. You'll be shocked at some of them.